What happens then? What happens when you feel like the magic is gone from the experience of having this manuscript? You got to get back in there.
I am a common man, you know, I suppose. And to be uncommon is to continually ask the questions.
Hey, y'all. It's Bianca Stone here at the Root Stone House podcast off Route 99 out in Tucson, Arizona. Yee-hoo! Okay. Hey, you cats and crazy kittens. How y'all doing tonight? You ready to talk about some poetry? Hello, everybody. I'm Bianca Stone, and I'm talking today with my dear friend and colleague, Leanne Ruel. Leanne, thank you for joining me today to talk about the endlessly interesting topic of putting a manuscript together, a manuscript of poetry, be it your thesis for an MFA, a chapbook, or a full-length collection. Hi, Leanne.
Hi, Bianca. Nice to see you here on this.
It's really good to see you.
Lovely video platform.
It's really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you are putting together your first manuscript right now. And you are new to publishing, but you've had some published poems in magazines, but you haven't yet had a chapbook or a full length out. Just to give people context here.
Yeah.
What's it like for you putting together a poetry manuscript right now?
Well, shit. You know, I think it's really important to to understand that when you put together a manuscript, there might be poems or good work or good poems that like just don't make it in. And like you can't be afraid to like accept that they're not going to work, you know? Because once you feel the momentum of a manuscript coming together, you realize that it's not even necessarily your voice anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you're writing a poem, you get these momentary like openings into the subconscious, and you look back and you go like, oh shit, like that must be me, but like it's almost like you're in a trance or something, like you're accessing another part of yourself, or at least I am. And then when you get to put all of these poems together, the voice becomes less momentary and more of an actual like benevolent monster, you know, that you actually have to interact with. And so for me, the biggest challenge was actually just starting to try to put things together, because I was afraid of not finding that momentum in the poetry that I loved so much in other poetry books. I was afraid that it wasn't there, you know.
In the poems altogether,
like
you mean
as a whole, yeah. And what I found was that it was totally there, and that doesn't. I mean, who am I to say whether it's good or bad? But it definitely was there, and it became something that I could, once I got started, just like interact with on a very sort of weird plane.
By getting started, you mean sort of gathering all your poems together, maybe printing them out, looking at them, like how did it really actually begin?
Well, it began by like recognizing that like even though I'm such a self-hater and a self-lover, it's very strange.
Yeah.
That, right. Like it was worth doing. Like I'm always like, I hate books, but I love books. But I hate the idea that like putting together a book means something of my worth in my mind, you know. So like getting over that hurdle was like, okay, I can put together some work of mine and call it a book and have it not be this like self-aggrandizing.
Right. You're like, who am I to presume that I could, you know, it's like this, first of all, like probably like product of our society and our status financially, but also just like our human predicament of being like, I don't want to offend the gods, you know, or to presume that I could hold fire. Or also like, you don't want the like tribe or something to like kick you out for thinking you're so great, to be listened to over somebody else. But of course, somebody's got to be listened to in the group, right? So it's the people who overcome that and have something worth hearing that sustain.
Yeah. I mean, and I think
ancient Neolithic bard you.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge hurdle. I think that is a hurdle for a lot of people, especially people outside of like the academic elite world. You know, like the anti-MFA people, or like the people who just don't have an MFA. It's like, it just is like, you know, it's like,
which you don't,
right? Which I don't. But it's like this sort of like bitterness, and also like, well, fuck you, you MFAers, kind of thing. And also like, I totally recognize the value in it. You know, whatever. So it was.
Well, it's interesting that you. Yeah.
It was just getting.
Well, it's interesting to bring.
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
It's fucking delays. Lost my train of thought. Oh, the interesting difference is that like in MFA programs, the students are very obsessed with their manuscripts and putting a book out and getting it out there. And it's like, I remember going into my MFA thinking, I'm only going to get my MFA because I want to really work on my first book manuscript with like, you know, some critical, you know, opinions that I may or may not take. And it was so humbling to like realize that was really actually had a lot that I wanted to learn about myself as a writer and as a reader of poetry and as a person who's existing in the poetry world. Like I was just beginning and I was going into it thinking I had it all figured out and I was ready for my book. And you know, we're not all James Tate who like, you know, got his book taken when he was a nobody for the Yale Younger and was a genius ever since. Whatever. Like we're all, you know, it's – there are those people, you know, that publish very young and they just – it just comes really natural to them to put a book together. But even though, I mean, he put a huge amount of work in learning who he was as a poet and evolved over the years. And my point is that – you gotta like in talking about putting a book together, it's a balance between knowing being presumptuous enough and brave enough to say, you know what, I'm just gonna see what happens when I start putting my poems together, because I think I have a lot of poems, I think I have a lot of things I've been working on, and I think it constitutes a book. And I, of course, want to get published because that's the goal, right? We all want to get our work out there so that it's seen, so that it does the work we set out to do.
Right.
But it when it gets dangerous is that when you want a book more than you want your poems to succeed. So, and I hear it all the time, and I've certainly felt it myself, is like when you do publish things too prematurely, it just doesn't actually feel good in the long run to see those things out there that weren't ready yet. And whatever, you just got to move on. But the joy of working towards a book is the struggle and the journey and getting there and then being really proud of it and being able to move on to the next thing, because you're constantly making new books, right? And the fun of putting a book together is first what you're doing, which is presuming that you're ready and presuming your poems are good enough. So you're trusting your art and trusting yourself, taking that first step. And then as you start to assemble it, you start to see patterns, right? Are you starting to see things, the patterns in your poems once they're all together?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of what I spoke about before, about it having its own separate voice from you, speaks to those patterns, because they're all attempting to, or those poems come together to be one thing, or at least I hope. The poetry books that I love the most aren't just people's poems one after the other. It's that, but it's a telling of something larger, some larger sort of theme or whatever. And it becomes more than just the speaker's voice. I don't know how else to explain it, at least in this moment.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do, I think. Well, this discussion of the voice is, I just got in a discussion with Ben Perkett on Twitter. He posed some question about the, I might as well just pull it up.
Yeah.
Hey. Ben Perkett, Perkert. Wow, I've been saying it wrong all this time. Ben Perk, sorry, Ben. Ben Perkert said, the pressure that a writer feels to develop their own individual voice, is this something writers everywhere experience, or is it particularly an American obsession? I've been thinking about it a lot lately. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was connected to what you were saying, because all of a sudden I was worried that my mic wasn't working and my mind went blank. Is my mic working? Wait, Walter. I think it is a lot of it is in a way about developing your own individual voice, and figuring out who, you know, and the word individual I think is problematic, and that's, I don't know how much we're going to get into that, but like the point is that you have to start figuring out who you fucking are as a poet. And I think all our favorite poets are very unique and in the sound of their poems, the way that they speak, the way that they use the speaker in the poem, they use the self, they use the I, the way that they take information from the world, take information from the books they love, the things they're obsessed with, their own upbringing, their own psychology, their own subconscious and unconscious and conscious, all mixed together and sort of squeezed out of this little toothpaste tube onto the page with its blood and its fluoride and its fucking bristles and its I just sounded like Gandis right there. The point is that, you know, you're figuring out how to filter this information in an authentic way to you, not, you know, we start out as artists, as adoring and worshiping other artists and wanting to sound like so-and-so, you know, and trying to make our book look like, you know, Dinesh Smith's book. And it's like, Dinesh Smith did that book. You know, you don't need to do that book again. You know, you've got to somehow honor the people you love and the books that you love. Because I think we don't just love the poets. We love the way they construct poems and the way they construct books. And we want our books to be like that for someone else. We want our books to be constructed in a way that people are like, wow, I'm like, reading this book is such a pleasure for me. The way they've placed the poems, the way they've made sections or the title of this book, just the themes that they were exploring. I just think, God, this book is in existence. We want that for our own books, right? And of course we'd be like looking at other people's books with this anxiety and horror that my book will never be their book. And I don't want my book to be their book. So what does that mean? It means you have to like trust yourself and the way that you write things. And yes, it's going to be in conversation with other people's poems. And yes, it's going to be lifting from other voices. That's what we are as human beings. We're just these Borg entities of grafted on species throughout time. And, you know, my grandmother's here and my fucking great grandfather's in my armpit. And I don't know what the fuck I'm saying, but like, it takes time and patience and like, and dedication. Like,
yeah. Well, because there's so much. I was talking to somebody the other day about like, how, yes, we're so aware of our physical realm and we can see it and feel it and all the rest. And we all know that there's like an intangible realm, but that's just as real, you know, that like sort of metaphysical realm. Mm-hmm. And by continuing to practice poetry and writing or any art, like you're attempting to reach that metaphysical like plane and find yourself within it. And I think that, yeah, like you definitely need to practice that. And then when you find your voice within that space, you need to, like you said, I was just thinking that before, that you need to trust the action of it. And I also think that people get caught up, including myself, in like dismantling the poem so much that it becomes a sort of like flat, soulless piece of writing. And it can still be assigned meaning, but there's something about the untidiness of something, of a poem, that can be so appealing. Mm-hmm. And can lend itself to like an authentic voice.
Which, yeah, it's like, led... yeah,
go ahead. I was just,
well, just thinking about the sort of over-edited clean poem. To me, that seems like very safe and like, but it's the, and maybe people will like it because it doesn't, it's sort of between meaning and intention and just sort of looks beautiful and, you know, hits all the right notes, but it's kind of boring and not special or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. And I don't know. I only know what I have experienced. I'm not an expert on it by any means, but I just feel like the poetry that I love actually is not full of beautiful language, you know, and I've talked to you about this before. It's a little bit fumbling sometimes, and it's simple most of the time. And I think if I get anything from that poetry specifically, what it's taught me is that I need to be less concerned with writing a poem and more concerned with tapping into that other plane that I exist in, but I'm feeling separated from.
Interesting. That's really interesting, because it's true that we can get a little carried away with this abstract idea of writing a poem. And of course, that would mean that you're falling back on past information about all the poems, how a poem is, what makes a poem, what's poetic language. And instead, you're writing that instead of tapping into the unknown experience of creating the poetic. And you have to adopt a poetic mindset in order to write the poem, but you're not, in a way, you're not sitting down to write a poem, even though you are sitting down to write a poem. But you're not obsessed with this idea of like, I need to write a great poem that can get published. Is there anything less inspiring than being like, I've got to write a great poem that can get published? You know, it's, publishing is so secondary to the creation. Even though it's essential to publish, because you have to, the poem needs an audience to become, to interact. You know, we're not writing in poems in a vacuum. We're not writing poems in our diary just to work through something. We're writing poems for other people. So publishing is not important, but it's still somehow secondary. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it begs a question that, what does a poem become when it enters into the public realm? Does it become something more? And what is that more? I mean, I wonder if a poem becomes
more than what?
More than just the meaning on the page. And I wonder, like, does the poem become itself once it's being received by another person?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's never fully become itself until it's interacting with somebody. And it's going to be different for each person. But fundamentally, I think we set things up to have certain cues, to access certain experiences within people. And, you know, that's where the overlap happens. And there's something in it that's almost like human experience and emotions and the way that we are in the world. There's some universal truths to it that I'm hesitated so long there because all of a sudden I was reading Hegel this morning and I don't want to do what he's saying about truths, which are a little bit the rhetoric of trivial truths, which I feel like I don't want to get, okay, fuck it. I'll get
it's
on a
okay.
tangent.
You can get into it. It's
fine. I can get out any tangent I want.
Your fucking podcast later.
It's my fucking podcast. Forget it. Now I'm completely in the other direction. I'm going to have to read this bit. It's from, of course, the preface, which is as far as I've gotten, but it's a lot. There's a lot here. Number 69, which I thought was so relevant in thinking about such a child. I'm a little child.
Like, what
in a big, scary body. What?
Ben said, like, sometimes when we're together, it's like all id. So I feel like I just bring out,
it's
like, child.
All like, id, like, all the time, Leanne and Bianca. It on it action. All right. So wrong. Now, about Hegel, I love it. I just feel like Hegel brings it so hardcore. It's so biting. He's so good. He's talking about philosophizing by the light of nature. That flows along the more even course of sound. Wow, I'm sorry. I was like echoing there and didn't know what I was talking about. Sorry, echoing in the void there. Didn't know what I was doing. So offering only at best the rhetoric of trivial truths. This is what sort of like surface level philosophizing, and I was thinking about it as like surface level poetry, and not even in like a mean way, but like I think we all do this a lot. You know, it's something that the writer struggles with too. But we're already in for like more than trivial truths. I feel like real poets are like in for the deep truths. So, but it would be better by far to spare oneself the effort of bringing forth ultimate truths of that kind, for they have long since been available in catechisms or in popular sayings, etc. It is not difficult to grasp such vague and misleading truths, or even to show that the mind, in believing them, is also aware of their very opposite. When it labors to extricate itself from the bewilderment this sets up, it falls into fresh contradictions and may very well burst out with the assertion that the question has been settled. And so, and that so-and-so is the truth, and that other, the other views are sophistries, which are arguments for the sake of confusing. For sophistry is a slogan used by ordinary common sense against educated reason, just as the expression visionary dreaming sums up once and for all what philosophy means to those who are ignorant of it. You could put poetry there in place of philosophy. Since the man of common sense makes his appeal to feeling to an oracle within his breast, he is finished and done with anyone who does not agree. He only has to explain that he has nothing more to say to anyone who does not find and feel the same as himself. In other words, he tramples underfoot the roots of humanity. For it is the nature of humanity to press onward to achievement with others. Human nature only really exists in an achieved community of minds. The anti-human, the merely animal, consists in staying within the sphere of feeling and being able to communicate only at that level. To me, this is relevant in what we're talking about. Because I know it's a lot, but to me, it's relevant in what we're talking about because I think there has to be I see it in workshops sometimes when people are like, well, that's just how I feel, you know, like you're wrong because this is how I felt. And like, I understand it and you just don't get it. And it's like, you've got to go, you're not going deep enough or something to find that place of mutual connection and ambiguity in which we can all have a kind of mental discussion. If it's almost like, I feel like poems offer up this space of philosophizing without even knowing you're doing it as the writer or the reader. But that when I interact with one of your poems that's nailing it, doors are being opened in my mind and questions are being asked that don't necessarily even need an answer, but I'm exploring mentally, in this more, like you were saying, metaphysical, space. And also maybe I feel like, you know, I am reaffirming truths, my truths, things I sort of feel I know to be true, but aren't articulated or something. But poetry can so easily slip into these easy truths.
Well, I mean, as anything can. I mean, my reaction once you read that was more based on the fact that, like, that speaks so much to just like the dichotomy of people now,
you know,
politically and culturally, and it's like,
absolutely.
And I fall prey to that. Like, I feel that I am on the righteous side, you know, of all of these arguments, which question merits of good or evil, when in reality, like, I am a common man, you know, I suppose. And to be uncommon is to continually ask the questions. And once you have an answer, to distill that question down further and further and further, and then you may get to a point where the answer is not something that can be intellectually explained. And I think that speaks to what happens in poetry sometimes, that we ask ourselves, why is this particular poem or this line so damaging to me? And I mean damaging in a good way.
Yeah.
What about these like simple words, this phrase, what is it doing to me? And there is no intellectual answer. Sometimes it's just this, it's a thing.
Thank God.
It's a thing, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, I know that we're digressing off the manuscript thing, but whatever.
Well, let's bring it, how can we bring it back? Because I think putting together a manuscript is a really big deal. And I'm really intense lately, so maybe just everything is a big deal. But also, I think manuscripts may be one of the most important things in my life to think about, do, create. You know, I'm at a point where it's like, you know, I'm helping people with their manuscripts right now a lot. And I get a little overwhelmed because I want so badly to raise, like, the stakes are so high for me. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, well, honestly, I could just like say what's working well and what's not working well and send them on their way and they'd probably be fine with that. But like, I don't want to do that. Like, I want to bring them like up into the next level of like making something amazing. And, you know, it's sad to hear people tell stories about, and I have these stories too, but like having you know, teachers in MFA programs working with them on their manuscripts. And it's just like, they don't really, there's no, it's like, it's good enough, but it doesn't really change anything. And it doesn't really feel like they have a lot of time to think about your book. And they just like, well, you kind of suck anyway. You're probably not going to be very good. They don't say this, but this is the feeling you get, like, you know, and it's like, I would rather like say something that's going to be really hard to hear, like, your manuscript is struggling a lot with cliches and you're going to have to take out a lot of the language here and replace it. That may sound harsh, but actually it's an incredible moment of opportunity for you as a writer, because that means you've got the bones and maybe even just the recipe, but like, you get to go in there and imbibe it with amazing stuff, with virtually limitless options of imagery and language. And you've got to fall in love with your own process. You know, you've got to be like, you've got to fall in love with language, really, because people forget that this is language we're dealing with too. You know, we're not dealing with just like trying to make a beautiful, intense experience sound meaningful. It's like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Maybe this experience doesn't seem significant as an arc in this book, but I'm going to do it anyway, you know, and just see what happens. It's, oh, I'm like shaking. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
No, but I mean, you're making...
Let's sum it up. We've talked long enough. Sorry, overlap again.
Have we? Okay. No, it's okay. It's fine. Yeah, we've talked long enough. Let's sum it up. I mean...
Let's think about what's some practical advice we can tell people who have a bunch of poems in a pile right now.
My number one... Even worse. I don't have number ones and twos.
Sorry, go on.
Go ahead. And I'll wait a while because there's a delay. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a shitty delay. Even worse than having a pile of poems to work with is having a manuscript that you've worked on way too long and have sent out everywhere and can't get published. And sorry, everybody. I know that's the place you're in right now. I've been there so many times. But what happens then? What happens when you feel like the magic is gone from the experience of having this manuscript? You got to get back in there. And it doesn't mean you have to start over again, but you got to get back in there and you got to pull it open. And putting my books together, I can't even stress this enough. For me, the book happens after I finish the manuscript. Then my book comes together, because then I work with somebody else on what's missing, what they get from it. And I start seeing gaps and I start seeing things that are repeated way too much. I need to take out poems. Like we all do it. We write the same poem over and over again. You don't need all 10 of those poems in there. It's just going to weigh everything down. And then expand upon things you've forgotten to expand upon. And even to like right up until the book is at the press, I'm still thinking about those things, you know? The problem that happens is that people have to send a contest to get published because there's not a lot of opportunity otherwise. And also it just takes more work to figure out that world. And so to send out to contests, you really have to have your book pretty much done and good and ready to go, because people who are reading it are judging it on that level. They're judging it as a done book. And usually the press is, you know, they'll do some editing with you, but they're not looking to like make your book, like find the book that's hiding in your book, you know, like they're not going to do that.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
So but that's a predicament, you know? And I think that if you've been sending your book out for many years and it's not getting taken, then that your book is not it needs, you know, you need, like I said, to just get back fucking in there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's all that speaks to the thing that I was going to mention, which is that as hard as it is, you need to be able to detach yourself from the thing, from the entity of this book, you know, so that you can see it more clearly. And I think that when you are able to detach yourself, you can read it as though it were not yours anymore. You can read it as though it were anybody. And then you have to be honest with yourself. You know, what is this actually doing? What is this saying? How is this making me feel?
Yeah.
I mean, I can say that, like, in my earlier poems, they were full of, like, what I call beautiful language. And now when I read them, I can see what they were missing, you know?
Yeah. Entirely. You get that clarity.
You get this clarity. So actually, and stepping away from a manuscript that hasn't been accepted and just start working on new stuff for a while gives you some space to be able to go back and see that work as though it weren't your own anymore, just to like create that air between it and you. And then also like poetry and manuscripts and books and all of this, everything in this world is like so serious. It's very serious.
Yeah.
And it's also like extremely important to like not take it or yourself so seriously, because oftentimes like that, the meaning that is assigned from a beautiful poem, and I use the word beautiful for lack of another, comes like in moments of humor and I'm going to use the word simplicity again, and just like I just think it's really important to like understand that it doesn't have to be so serious all the time, and I think that gives you another perspective as well on the merits of what it's actually become in front of you.
This has been really special talking with you. I love seeing the evolution of your manuscript and the evolution of your poems since I've met you 3 years ago or 2 years, I can't remember now. And, you know, that's really what's special is that, like, you know, 1 minute you can think your manuscript and your poems are one thing, and then before you know it, you know, you fall in love with the whole world of poetry, reading science, reading philosophy, whatever, falling in love with all of it and bringing it all in with just curiosity and awe and appreciation for what's come before and what will come after and what other people are doing. And of course, with a healthy amount of fear and jealousy and all the rest of it, you get there. One day you wake up and you're like, oh my God, I'm doing it. And I see that happening with you and your work. And it's just like, it just couldn't make me feel more happy and like we're doing something together, you know? I feel so much camaraderie with my fellow friends, artists, you know, that the people that you have in your clique, really bolstering each other up and like giving to each other and sharing with each other. And, you know, that's just what I'm so grateful for.
That makes me feel more like a poet.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you. I'm grateful for it too, but I was just saying that makes me feel more like myself and as a poet than like my actual writing of poems, like this like reciprocity. Well, anyway, thank you. Thank you for talking with me.
Join us next time. We'll be talking about the sophistries of ordinary man.
Something like that. All right, bye.
Bye. Bye.